There comes a moment in every communicants class when the eyes of all those attending glaze over, and you can almost read their thoughts as they start to wonder, what is this that they've gotten themselves into? We do the easy stuff first, you know, the Christian life and practice, church attendance, prayer, Bible, lifestyle, Christian witness, involvement and service, and it's all straightforward enough, folk are with me. And even when we get onto the God stuff, again, nods of understanding and agreement. God the Father, yes, fine, we understand that. We get the picture. God the Son, yes, we can cope with that. We understand that. Then it happens. God the Holy Spirit. And the eyes glaze over. And the foreheads crease with a worried frown. God the Holy Spirit. What on earth is all that about? And I'm not so sure that even those quite long in the tooth in Christian faith and church belonging are all that sure about God, the Holy Spirit. So this coming Pentecost Sunday, up ahead, the day of the Holy Spirit, I'll be watching out for those eyes glazing over as we try to do a bit of thinking about who the Holy Spirit is, the third person of the Trinity, whose name we invoke every Sunday as we ask for the blessing of God, Father, Son, and Spirit to be upon us as we leave church to face the coming week. What does the Holy Spirit do? How does the Holy Spirit affect our lives, if at all? It helps perhaps to remember that the Holy Spirit of God is not some notion the early church thought up one cold Sunday. The Spirit of God is found at work in the story of the Old Testament at many significant moments. There at the very beginning, the Spirit broods over the chaos of pre-creation existence. It's the Spirit who inspires the prophets, gives special gifts to men and women, and moves through the annals of history, breaking into the human story with creative power. And it is the deep hope of the Old Testament writers that one day that Spirit will be poured out over the nations in a profligate waterfall of grace and power. The New Testament church experiences that moment, and Pentecost is the celebration of that coming of the Spirit with an earth-shattering power. And that's a clue to the understanding of the role of the Holy Spirit in the life of the early church. This was no theory evolved by the church in the ivory tower of contemplation. It was a fact, a reality that burst into their lives right there in the marketplace under the gaze of a suspicious public. And they had to cope with an experience and talk about an experience, not simply devise an abstract notion, a theological construct. The understanding of God in his fullness as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit was what they had to arrive at in the light of events, the actual situation they were dealing with, what was happening. So the early church didn't just develop a doctrine, but experienced a presence that knocked them for six, knocked them sideways. And they struggled to find words to talk about that fact, that present fact that was turning their experience head over heels. So what happened to demonstrate that reality of the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of Christ let loose in the church and in the world? What was happening to these Christians that helped them, required them to understand and affirm the reality that though Christ, the Son of God, was not with them in the flesh anymore, the Spirit of Christ was with them in vivid and powerful reality, in their lives, in their story, making the story of the church happen. They discovered a new courage that dragged them out of their safety zone into the risk and danger of witness to Christ in a pagan and violent world. Instead of weak-kneed silence and cowardly capitulation, there was confident and bold declaration, a willingness to risk everything in order to proclaim the gospel. It was just as Christ had promised them. His Spirit was in them, giving courage beyond their own. Courage beyond their own timorous tentative attempts to tell the story. And with that courage, these men and women, simple men and women with previously uncomplicated lives and ordinary livelihoods, found the words, the right words, to preach the gospel to emperors and intellectuals, to working folk and to artists. They were given the words that won hearts and impressed minds, persuaded wills. Words that won the world for Christ. Think about it at the start, just 12 guys with nothing going for them at all. And yet people's hearts were touched, lives were changed, and the gospel spread like a bushfire across the globe, down through the centuries. Men and women were won for Christ, generation upon generation. And it was not because they were super salesmen with oily tongues and clever arguments. They knew where the power came from and where the change was born. Salvation and conversion is spirit work. The Holy Spirit stirs a conscience, finds a way past the negative barriers that people put up between their stubborn will and the truth of Christ. These are still the dynamics of the Spirit of Christ. When we find the courage and when we find the words where men and women are converted to Christ, all that is spirit work. No human agency can winkle its way into the decision of the human spirit. That is spirit work. I could be the greatest preacher in the world, but I will never win a single soul for God. That is spirit work. The Holy Spirit at work. The early church also enjoyed the inspiration of the Spirit as it wrote down the story, created the liturgy, stirred the imagination with beauty and art, music and devotional writing. That capacity to stir the human spirit, to reach in where the guilt is most severe and hidden, to liberate and forgive, to move and uplift, where the conscience is most hardened and stubborn, it's the Spirit of Christ who filters past the defence mechanism. To confront people with the facts, the reality, the truth. And over the centuries, when men and women have given their lives into the service of Christ and felt the summons and the call to special service in the mission field as full-time workers in their own special calling within the church, treasurers, Sunday schools, teachers, visitors, givers, prayers, that has happened in the hearts of people at such a profound level. They can only acknowledge it to be spirit work. We don't have to think very long or very hard to recognize these features of the role of the Holy Spirit, the activity of the Spirit of Christ in our own experience. If you've ever found a hymn or a prayer or a sermon, reach into your very heart and grab it. If you have been touched and challenged and dared by a word spoken or sung, if you have felt that irresistible call to service in some way within the life of the church, so that you can't be at peace until you answer that summons, then that is the presence, the work, the effect of the Holy Spirit, loose and free in our world, blowing like the wind through the church. If you have ever managed to overcome bitterness, to forgive, to break down the walls of enmity in the Spirit of Christ, just as Christ would have you do, that's how you were enabled to show that grace, because the Spirit of Christ takes you there. And in different ways, little breaths as well as big winds. The very familiar Pentecost passage in the book of Acts gives the impression, perhaps, that the presence of the Spirit is all about big, dramatic, ecstatic moments when big things happen and the bells and the whistles set the church a-jumping. It can certainly be like that. It would be less than the whole story not to allow that for some Christians, their experience of the presence of Christ's Spirit is a very vivid and earth-shattering kind. But the New Testament also speaks of the Spirit coming to the disciples of Christ like a little breath, bearing the gentle fruits of the Spirit, meekness, kindliness, the reconciling Spirit. All those things that Paul lists as creative signs of the presence of the Holy Spirit in anyone's life. We don't need to speculate whether our experience of God in our story is a valid one, just because we neither know nor want those more extravagant evidences of the presence of the Spirit, the ecstatic utterances, the worship punctuated with speaking in tongues and special signs and demonstrations of spiritual power. Maybe we're just happy to seek the quiet coming of God into our heart and into our life, making new things happen in how we deal with other people and how love takes root in our hearts. But what this Holy Spirit means for the church is that God is with us, the same God who is Father, created us and loves us, the same God who is Son, comes among us in his generous, wonderful presence and lives and dies to save us. The same God with us, in us. And it means it's the same God who is with us wherever and whenever, speaking the same truth. So that if we're up in an aeroplane, he's with us. If we're in Australia or Bangladesh, if we find his people worshipping, we will find the same spirit of love, the same capacity to be touched, challenged, and healed in our inner heart, regardless of geography or circumstance. Jesus of Nazareth was limited by space and time. He had to be in one place at one time. The Spirit of Christ, free as the wind, equipping the church with the truth of Christ, in the name of Christ, through the love of Christ. This is God with us, our blessing, your blessing. For all Christians are blessed with that Holy Spirit, the sign and the guarantee of our belonging, so that we feel the feelings and we know the truth and we experience the peace and the forgiveness. We grow however slowly in grace. We're reached by the inspiration and the emotion, the wonder and the love of our faith. And mercifully, by the grace of God, inch by inch, bit by bit, the fruits of the Spirit begin to appear in our lives. In the final analysis is revealed the wonderful truth that the very Spirit of Christ lives in us and empowers us to make a go of the Christian life. Alone, we would be doomed to failure. And Christ, to return to the Father, understood that. In his love, he gave us his Spirit to make the difference between success and failure. In his love, he gave us his Spirit to make the difference between success and failure.